Hi, I'm Rebecca DeRosecroft, Content and Services Director at Westchester Education. Welcome to Westchester Words UK and International. Today I'm joined by animator and video producer Simon Haynes, director of the video production company SH Creative, and if I can be so bold as to say, also a great guy to know and work with. Welcome to Westchester Words, Simon.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. That's a lovely introduction.
You're more than welcome. So let's start with a little bit about you, Simon. How did you get into this industry, and in particular working on educational materials?
That's a great question. And to be honest, it's over a long period of time. I think we've worked with each other, haven't we, for, what would you say, 12, 14 years?
Yeah, about that, yeah. Went way back when I first started at OUP.
So, yeah, I started as a junior creative in the advertising industry back in about 95. My role, if you like, was working above the line. So we worked across film, TV, cinema, print, radio.
Okay, so everything then.
Yeah. Well, not everything, actually, because you had below-the-line agencies then that dealt much more with direct marketing and what then became EDM. But agencies suddenly took on this kind of change, transition. They became more integrated, which meant that they combined all the skills. And really, this happened when the digital age kind of came along. Not to give you the history of ad agencies and what they've become today.
No, it's interesting and it's relevant.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I think because it is relevant because a lot of the clients that I work with today talk about omnichannel marketing, and omnichannel marketing is quite complicated. There are experts in this field, so I'm not pretending to be one of those experts, but I work with a lot of them. And it's my role generally in this arena is to take an idea and make sure that it remains constant to all the users in that journey, no matter where, at what point they interact with the brand, if you like.
Yeah,
so I think that is really relevant to what film does, and film being an encompassing word for everything that is moving visual. So that could be motion graphics, film, animation, that kind of thing. But you know, in that industry, you work agency side. Some people go over and work client side. I did a little bit of client side work. But around about 2002, I started to see a shift in the market in film production. We were starting to see briefs come in from clients where, not to put too big a figure on it, but they were kind of £300,000 budget, film production budgets, and that would be a kind of average film production budget. And we were seeing them cut. And we were seeing them cut to something like 30-50K, which sounds like a lot. Yeah, but there was a shift in change in the way that people were starting to use film. And one of those changes was in, at the time, they were calling viral. You know, viral was something that was stuck on YouTube or any other what we're calling social media platforms these days. And it was then marketed to be a high-performing viral. So high-performing virals were things where you got lots and lots of people watching them effectively. It was kind of early days.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a shift there. And I think one of the shifts that followed it was making film production more affordable. Mm-hmm. Not only the equipment, but also the means by which you could edit and produce those films started to become more affordable and more accessible as well.
Mm.
So fast forward really quickly to, say, 2008, when I started SH Creative, or SH Creative was already started, to be honest, but the clients I was working with were demanding more and more film. I was able to enter the kind of film production arena on quite a small budget compared to what I would have had to have probably spent 10 years prior to that. So cameras were cheaper. There was a bit of a funny time around about then where there was a DOP, so director of photography, someone who was very much championing the 5D Mark II camera as a means by which you could shoot really beautiful, high-quality film using a stills camera. And Canon kind of started leading that. And that gave a shift in the market, and it gave people like myself the ability to be able to shoot really good quality film at quite a low budget cost. So that was a really interesting time.
Yeah, and like you say, on an accessibility note as well, you know, opening it up and, you know, not just it's not just making it accessible for people who want to create create the video and create the art and all of that, but actually it's accessible for people who want to watch it as well, isn't it? Because suddenly you can go onto the internet to watch things, which we didn't have, you know, back in the 90s when you were starting out. So it's interesting on that note as well, and especially thinking about in education, how to view video in a classroom will have completely changed at that time because of the digital revolution, really.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. We've had issues, we've had problems, and I know that working with publishers as well, accessing classrooms can be quite problematic.
Of course,
and that, so but you get over these issues by working with everybody who's in the chain, if you like.
Yes, yeah.
So working with local councils, perhaps looking at how you can work with schools in a larger group to be able to. To be able to work with their IT departments and people who govern what can be seen in schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's quite a big responsibility with everybody as well. I've always said that I think it's really important in these environments that you're safeguarding the people that you're working with. So that's quite a big production responsibility. So I think running a production company, you realise that you have to have many hats. Not only are you looking through the camera and working obviously with people like yourselves to make sure that we're capturing exactly what you're after, but also you're thinking about safeguarding, not only the school safeguarding, but safeguarding all the people that work for you as well.
Yeah.
So that you're creating a really open and honest environment for people to work in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting thinking back to, I mean, we've been working together for way over a decade now. And when I think back to the types of things we were working on when we first started working together, they tended to be like kind of studio based or, you know, set in an office, lots of talking heads with experts and that kind of thing. And then I can see the shift we took to then we'd be on site, we'd be working in schools and filming teachers and pupils, and to your point, you know, working on that safeguarding and that kind of thing. And then I can see how we've now moved, and the types of things we've been working on together have tended to be animation and more of like a digital base, rather than kind of live footage and live action filming, if you will. I just wonder if you've seen that change as well, or if that's just how I viewed it because of the projects we've been working on together. It'd be great to see, to understand your kind of perception of how the trends have shifted in the education market since we first started working together.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is
a big question.
It's a big question, but also it's a lovely question because, you know, we've had the luxury of being able to see the last decade, if you like, with how video and production, film production, myself, and also working with other people, how that's progressed. And I think people have filled a role, if you like, where perhaps when we first started working together, there wasn't a dedicated role to film production per se within production companies. At least I wasn't seeing that. To then creating roles, and those roles came through people taking on the responsibility initially within their existing role, but then soon finding out that to do real film production takes an awful lot of time. And if your role is not film production, then yes, you've got to rely on other people supporting you, but also self-development's really important. So I've been involved on a number of different projects that where you work directly to people who are responsible for video production. You take on the role in other projects where you are responsible for the video production. And then of late, if you come the whole circle, I've been working with clients to help them train staff to take on their own video production. So having in-house producers.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. I felt a similar trend actually. Recently, there's been a bit more understanding of wanting somebody in-house to do things like the editing afterwards. You know, someone's going to sit on Final Cut and do some editing in-house and work it that way so that the content can be reused or reversioned for further down the line, which I've thought's quite interesting because, yeah, definitely over the past 10 years, it's been that you produce it and you hand it over and it's done and dusted. But I have, I've been seeing that a bit more too, just that more of an understanding of video production and more of a want to get involved.
This goes back to film production being more accessible and effectively making budgets more realistic. So we're not looking at blown out budgets that doesn't make film affordable. Yes, it does make content film affordable. And then I feel that there's also the addition of affordable content. So you've got huge libraries as well that you can access for content. So you don't actually have to go out and film anything. You can rely on stock video. Quite a lot of larger production companies don't have the ability to go out and film. They will use stock. And we could get onto a larger conversation about these bigger media production companies who work directly to clients. But from what you were saying, internally, I think there has been a shift. And I think it's a simple change. A simple change in film production, if you like, is the use of the media across multiple platforms. And if you have a piece of film that's cut and edited and produced, if you rewound 12 years, I think that would be put online and then you would assess how many people came to watch it.
Yeah.
No longer the case, is it? Because what you do is you have that simple film. If you've used an external agency or whether you've used an external production company or whether you've shot it internally, you can take on the role of reuse. And I think reuse is what you were talking about earlier, is quite a big thing now.
I agree.
It's a good thing as well, because you've shot something and you don't use it again. I mean, it seems crazy, doesn't it, now to think
about it? It really does, yeah.
Because there's so many ways of using it. Even if you're publishing something which is continual professional development, for example, that's hidden behind a paywall, there's elements of that that you can use to share, to market it, for example. Mm-hmm. It might be a really simple example. But and then relying on externals to do that for you is quite costly, whereas doing something internally seems much more, from a production value point of view, to have somebody in-house who's able to do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And just to your point about marketing as well, I think it's thinking back to when we were first, or I was first working in film with you, kind of, you know, 12, 14 years ago, a lot of the film that we were producing was for marketing reasons. It was either, you know, working with publishers and it was education based, but it was either marketing or it was supplementary to a piece of material, but wasn't kind of asked for by the, you know, by the client or by the market. They weren't actually asking for it. You know, it was something that we were kind of giving to them because we could. Whereas now they're coming to us for that. You know, they've got that bigger understanding of video and how it can work in the classrooms, especially in light of blended learning and in light of the pandemic as well. And I was wondering, not to talk too much about that, but did you see a change in what clients were asking for during or after the pandemic? Did it impact the kind of work you were producing at all?
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes. If we go back one little step, I think that just before the pandemic, the shift, as you rightly said, was where you were creating what I would call awareness-led marketing. So you're making people aware of a product, and you're giving them a reason to go and find out more about that product. And that is perfect for marketing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Perfect for marketing and sales. I think people started to want content for nothing, content for free, because I can go online, go to BBC, I can go to other platforms, and I can find what I'm looking for, and I'm not charged for it. So there's a dilemma there, isn't there, of what you're prepared to give away
absolutely.
As well. I don't know what you call that, but in a way, what it is it's kind of quite reactive. And what I'm looking for is mostly digestible chunks of content. And I think audience behavior in online in general is, or was, looked at as being what's the attention time that this person or this user is prepared to give to this piece of content. If I'm not looking for a piece of content and I chance across a film and it draws my attention, I might have 20 seconds to grab you and make you watch that film or piece of content. However, if I'm a captive audience and I'm really looking for a piece of content, you've got me for longer. But there is a time that I'm going to give up and stop watching. And then there's a time where I'm going to take more interest and I'm going to want, what else do you give me? What else can you offer? And in a way, I'm looking at also self-serving content as well. And this is pre-pandemic. Yeah. I think some of this still, you know, most of it still stands today. But there's a kind of element of self-serve as well, and how we use that type of content. So a good example of self-serve is how-to films. So how do I use your website? How do I use your product? You know, and I can educate myself a little bit and become knowledgeable as well, although it be a very small amount of knowledge. And I think you could leap from there, especially in education, to the PD opportunities. Yeah. And I've done a lot of work in PD, and I love working in PD because you really get into the nitty-gritty and you really work on huge projects. So I've worked on a project where we've produced 300 films, for example. I worked on a project that was a secondary revision platform that was used in conjunction with publishing and books. So you'd be reading something, learning something, teaching something. And in the classroom, you could then bring the videos into the classroom, or you could empower the student and get them to do some learning before they come into the subject. So a little bit of pre-learning. And these kind of platforms are behind a paywall. You have to pay a license for them, but they're great to work on as well, you know, from my point of view.
Thinking, yeah, that, I mean, the revision platform really, was that type of work being done before the pandemic then, or was that something that came out of the pandemic? Because you could see that kind of setup really working, you know, when especially when kids were at home, having to be homeschooled.
From my point of view, we were doing a lot of it before the pandemic.
Right, okay.
And I think I started to see a lot of people giving away that kind of content for free.
Yeah.
Because the pandemic united a lot of educationalists, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
That includes publishers, schools. We were effectively looking for ways to be able to continue delivering, you know, education using the excellence that we've created, really.
Yes, it was a real working together effort, wasn't it?
Exactly. And I think you asked about how did the pandemic impact work, my work or any work that anyone was producing. I think you can successfully say that COVID stopped a lot of projects from starting.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I mean, thinking about any live filming as well, that's just out the window, isn't it?
I found that internal started to make their own
content.
And that was happening already. I was working with a client, not an educational client actually, it was completely different, but what they were doing a lot of is they were doing a lot of going to events and filming and interviewing people. They couldn't afford to have production companies in tow all the time. It wasn't a Netflix production of Formula One.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of it really was low budget. So I helped train them in developing their use of their phones. Using smartphones and how to integrate alongside that remote recording. So audio being a massive issue with recording with smartphones. So this is basically what I call internals making their own.
Yes.
So
yeah.
People, clients, marketing departments, publishers, editors, they were able to create their own content, working with educational experts as well. And I think that had a huge power to it. And the beauty is that you can re-record these days. You don't make something and it's up there forever. If you want to update it, if you want to make it better, you just re-record it and you can update through the platforms that you're broadcasting on. And using
it goes back to that from the top of this chat, really, around accessibility and being able to access all of this, you know, and thinking about accessing on mobile and accessing on internet, you know. None of this, if the pandemic had been 10-15 years ago, it would have been a very different outcome in terms of that accessibility and access to materials and information, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course. But I think in all situations, what you do is you look at how you can adapt and how you can adapt quickly. Once you've identified what you can adapt, you sprint, you basically make a, you know, you work as hard as you can to achieve that. And whether you put aside as a business other things that you're doing, then obviously that's a decision to be made by the businesses. But for example, in the pandemic, when the pandemic hit, we had quite a lot of work that was lined up that was stopped.
Yeah,
that was fine. But I looked at ways that I could adapt it, and motion graphics was a really obvious way.
Yeah,
and also I started personally to develop something called scribing, which I had done before, but it seemed a really obvious way to help people to get quick messages out there. And that's what the work was. It was quick work.
Yeah, I've seen some of the scribing. I think it's fantastic. Can you just describe a bit about that and to the listeners what that is?
Scribing?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's really good.
Years ago, they came up with these things that you could put attached to your computer via USB. They're called tablets. And you draw on a tablet. You just draw on a tablet, and then it would appear on your screen. And effectively, that's scribing, where you physically draw something, record it at the same time, and then edit it. And if I was to say that if I spent a day scribing, I'd spend a day editing the scribe. So it's really quick. And what you can achieve in a day of scribing is quite large. There are some programs that you can buy and you can do your own scribes. They kind of rely on you using what they do. They're quite hard to figure out. They're time consuming. So if your role is not to learn one of those programs, then I think, you know, it made perfect sense to work with someone like me who could make the scribe. The only thing with scribing is that you're reliant on the person who's scribing and their style. But there is a certain look to a scribe and a certain feel.
Which I think works really well for educational materials, especially when it comes to like maths and science and looking at, you know, formulas and things like that and breaking down sums. I think it's fantastic for that.
Scribing is a really cost-effective way of doing
that.
Yes, it always has been. I can produce a minute of scribe in 1 hour if required.
That's really, you know, that's great.
To film a minute or to animate a vector in a minute, it wouldn't be an hour's work. It's considerably more. So it's a really quick, cost-effective way of producing content. I like it. I really like it. I do too.
Okay, so to wrap then, my last question really is around new technologies, and in the advent of new technologies, where does film fit in now? Because obviously there's so much out there. Where do you see film fitting in the educational space?
Film has a place in the advent of new technologies, and it does fit in, but it's ever changing. The demand on film will change in that role. So you can't, if you like, and I've discovered this over my working life, is you can't learn something and rely on that. You're constantly learning, you're constantly adapting, and film is constantly adapting with it. So film will fit in, but it will be constantly adapting. And at the moment, if you said a good example of that is the use of film in AR, VR.
And
I go back to my expression that film includes animation, motion graphics, 3D. But just to wrap this up, if you like, I think while film's changing, the one thing that doesn't change is your strategy. The one thing that doesn't change is the creative role of actually writing good content on those platforms. Because film is not an answer to your strategic and creative demands. Film is the means by which you show those strategies and creativity.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Simon.
It's exciting.
It is. And like you say, it's about it's about adapting and reacting, isn't it? It's about keeping on top of new technologies and moving forward with it so that film does have a place. But that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Simon. That was such an interesting conversation. Thank you for joining us today.
I hope it was. Thank you very much.
It was, Simon. Thank you. For more podcasts from Westchester Words UK and International, just search Westchester Words on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts.